giving you your introduction. This be the 101. It's been a long time. I shouldn't have left you without a podcast to step to. What's up, y'all? Welcome back to the Look and Listen podcast. It's been a little bit of time, but, you know, wanted to come back with a great episode. As you see in the title, this is another 101 episode. This one is about acting, and I have a couple great folks on the podcast with me tonight. Friends of mine and also professional actors. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Nicole and Reggie from the What's the Tea podcast. What's up, y'all?
What up? Hey, how's it going?
Good, man. Good. How you doing today, brother?
I'm good. It was really hard for me not to finish those song lyrics because I
Yeah, man.
It was really hard. It was really hard, but I did.
Hey, man, you can go ahead and finish it now if you want to. You know what I'm saying?
No, it's okay. You have things to talk about.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, as I said, this is Nicole and Reggie from the What's the Tea podcast. You can check them out on iTunes and Stitcher and Podomatic as well. I was actually on their show last week or whatever. I think it was episode 24. Me and Sterling, aka the Wound Guy, did their show. So when the idea to come up to do this episode, you know, came to mind, I thought, you know, who better than have those two folks? So we're just going to go ahead and jump right into this. And, you know, I've got a bunch of questions. I don't know if we'll get through all of them, but we'll just kind of see where this conversation takes us. So the first question that I wanted to ask y'all is, you know, like you say on your show, you guys are really into origin stories. So what is your acting origin story? We'll start with Nicole. And then, you know, Reggie, you can go ahead and speak after that.
So, like, mine personally or ours, Reggie?
Yours personally.
Oh, okay.
He can tell his own.
So mine goes way, 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 way back to preschool. I was in our Christmas production, and I had a very small part, but apparently I stole the show, and at the end of it, grabbed the little dude who was playing the Christmas prince and kissed him on the lips. So I think from then on, my mom knew, you know, like Lauryn Hill said, I was just a little girl, skinny legs, a press and curl. My mama always thought I'd be a star. And from then, I just started to take some acting classes at the community center, and I did a few little joints there, but it really wasn't until high school that it kind of jumped off for me. So it's my magic moment, I call it. Every actor has their bitten story, and this is mine. I tried out for the basketball team, and one of the girls who was around my height had just quit that year, so she wasn't coming back, so I was pretty much guaranteed a spot. I was pretty garbage at basketball. I played in middle school, but I have bad knees, so running is like a huge challenge for me.
Right.
And I just sucked. Like I can't shoot. I'm just a horrible basketball player. But there was a spot open. They were going to, you know, train me, whatever. I've always been very athletic, so we would have figured it out. But I also auditioned for the fall play freshman year. And all my friends that I kicked it with did theater, or their older siblings did theater. So 90% of the people I kicked it with every single day did theater. Oh, but okay. All my old friends from middle school played basketball. And we were coming home, and I found out I got called back for the school play, and I got a second tryout for the basketball team. And on my walk home with my friends, I basically decided to go out for the play. And it's been on ever since.
So that was a pivotal moment.
Yeah.
See what I did there?
Mm-hmm.
Well done.
Thank you. Is that it for you, Nick?
That's it.
All right, Reggie, what's your story?
So I grew up kind of in Southern California. And my mom, bless her, mom art to the edgy, tried her best to give me a full childhood. So I, you know, played sports and stuff, but I did some like commercial stuff when I was a kid. I was in a Juicy Juice commercial. And then I auditioned for a play, like a really big play. I guess I can say it now. It's a long time ago.
Yeah.
I auditioned for The Lion King before I went to Broadway when I was like 7. And I was pretty good. And I got to the last callback, and it was me, another kid, and the kid who got it. And obviously, I didn't get it. So I was like, fuck this. And so I stopped acting for a while and played sports instead until college. And then just was reminded of how much I loved it and how much I realized this kind of is what I want to do with my life. And then since college, I've been acting professionally since then. So all of 6 months, as Nicole would say.
That's what's up. So are you guys stage actors or are you film actors? And a second part of that question is, you know, what do you think the differences, or what do you know are the differences between those two, stage and film acting? Reggie, we'll start with you.
Well, I am mostly a stage actor, but I have, this sounds so much fancier than it is. I have an agent and I do film and like television and commercial stuff. The main difference is that, well, I was going to say that stage actors are good, but that's not true. because I know lots of stage actors who are garbage.
But I
think there's a certain level of intrinsic respect for stage actors because there is the difficult task of having to recreate basically, in essence, the perfect moment 8 times a week, whereas TV and film actors only have to get it right once. So it doesn't necessarily really mean that you're a better actor because you do film or television or stage, but stage work is much harder because you have to do it perfect a lot more times.
Right.
And there's a much larger margin of error. And I will say there's a greater concentration of like solid actors among stage actors because there's only so much shit that you can fake and you can't really CG in emotion or, you know, being present. You can't, like you can on cameras.
And a lot of really great film actors got started on stage.
Exactly.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
5 actors are pretty much, with the exception of one, all from the theater.
That makes sense. And like Reggie said, it sounds like, you know, you have no margin for error, basically. Like if you fuck up on stage, then everybody knows you did it.
You can't get a cut. You can't start over. I mean,
I think that there's a particular nuance that comes with film acting that is very hard to learn.
Yeah.
It's something you just have to know. Like the camera doesn't like everybody. And I think it is
true.
I think it's equally as difficult, honestly, because you do have a, you know, very smaller margin of error in theater, but you also have an audience with a greater like opportunity to forgive you for that margin of error because you have that caveat of like, oh, well, it's live theater, so they might make a mistake. So I think the playing field is kind of level as far as difficulty. I haven't done much film work, but the little bit I have, it's hard. Like sometimes you have to play off of a camera lens 3 inches from your face, whereas in theater, you have another body on stage with you, living and breathing with you. And also the results of film are entirely up to a director, a DP, an editor. Like you give your performance and that's it. You don't know what's going to end up on the cutting room floor.
Right. And speaking of that, you know, I've done some work behind the camera, with film and video stuff or whatever. And, I wanted to ask you all, what do you think, is the best way for a director, I guess on stage or in film, to direct or motivate you? Nicole, we'll start with you. What do you?
That's a good question. A lot of directors I work with frequently, so they tend to be hands off with me because they figure by now we work together or I've been doing this so long they can kind of let me do my thing and make my discoveries, which is okay. But at a certain point, I really just need you to tell me what you want.
Right.
Like not breathe here, take a step here, but what do you want? And then let me do my best to try to give it to you. And if I'm not giving it to you, let's talk about making some adjustments. But I really do like to feel supported by a director. I like to feel safe in someone's hands. And I also like to know that the person I'm working with is prepared.
Right, right. From my experience, go ahead, Reggie.
No, yeah, being prepared is a big deal. Having a director that's kind of scatterbrained is the most infuriating thing ever.
Ever.
Right.
But thank God for a good stage manager, if that's the case.
Yeah, yeah. From my experience, it seems like the way I look at directing, the times that I've done it and as I do it in the future, I look at it as like coaching. You know, if we use a sports analogy quickly, it's kind of like if I'm the head coach and you guys are you know, players on my team, I've got to have a plan in mind in a way that I want us to play. But I have to be flexible enough to say, okay, well, we need to make some adjustments here or there. And then I also need to know, like we just talked about, the way that I have to motivate Nicole, the way that I can talk to her, the way that I can get through to her to really express what I need and what I want from her. And the same thing with Reggie as well. So I think that, you know, that's one of the key things on this side. And I've always heard that directors should take acting classes and vice versa so that you can really understand what the other side of the equation is really doing and what they think about and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, moving on.
Oh, before you move on real quick, yeah. I always love working with a director who was an actor.
Right.
But it's not a requirement. They get it for sure more than not. Because sometimes a director is kind of like a king. Like,
right.
This is what I want. You're just going to have to give it to me, which is great because it gives you something to work towards. But also, yeah. You know, too, that if a director has been an actor, they know, like, your scene partner is not giving you what you need. Right. Their breath is funky. You don't like your costume. You had a bad day. And they can be more sympathetic to stuff like that.
Yeah, like experience in that position will tell them, you know, exactly what you might be thinking about without you having to say it to them. And they can also, I think one of the main things about being a director is it's a leadership position. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the best leaders are the ones that have a plan and can stick to it. But like I said, can also make adjustments as they need to. And then, you know, be able to listen to what other people have to say, because you might have some great input. And if I really want to make this thing work, then maybe I need to listen to you. I can make the final decision, but, you know, I still need to be mindful of what other people are saying.
Yeah, the best directors are the best collaborators.
Right.
Like, you know, Napoleon was a great dictator,
right.
But dictators don't make great directors.
Exactly. They don't really make great people either. You know what I mean?
No. But so, you do have to be a leader and a decision maker, because when
definitely.
You start including too many people's input
right.
in the process, it could take forever.
Right. Yeah, you have to be willing to listen, but in the end you have to make the choice, and you have to, you know, be firm in that. You know what I'm saying? Like if you make a great suggestion, excuse me, I need to think about that. And if I decided that's the best way to go, I'll say, okay, we're going to go with what Nicole said, because, and then I can maybe, you know, explain why that is or whatever. So, yeah. How do you guys choose the roles that you want to audition for? Reggie, we'll start with you.
You know, it was very interesting. A friend of mine told me about the 5 P's that she uses. And they stand for the play, the place, the part, the people, and the pay. And so all 5 of those P's are not equal, because, you know, shit, time is hard. The pay is important.
Right, exactly.
Hey, I'm not coming out for your shit. Oh, God, I hope no one listens to this.
Oh, no one's listening.
I don't know, what kind of shit is that to say? Good day, sir. Good day, sir.
I will audition for all of your plays and movies, but you will have to talk to my agent about compensation.
That's right.
Hey, pay me.
This dude is fancy. He's got an agent.
But no, I mean, if it's something that I'm interested in at all, then I go for it. You know, now this might be a surprise to you, Leonard.
Okay.
But Nicole and I are black.
What?
I know it comes as a shock to a lot of people because we pronounce the ending consonants of our words, and we have investment portfolios, but we are black.
Damn.
And some, you know, for a long time, people were like, oh, you can't do Shakespeare, or you can't do Eugene O'Neill, or you can't do Neil Simon because you're black. I actually had a black college professor tell me that I couldn't do Shakespeare because of my black accent.
Wow. What?
So sometimes it's really difficult to get over those antiquated stereotypes of like black people in classical roles, like Greek plays or things like that. But if I'm interested in the character, then I go for it. Like, I don't really too much think about it now. And if you're a director or a producer who's like, oh, I don't really think there are any black people in this play, you're going to have to tell me that to my face. I don't too much self-select myself out of things. I feel like if I'm right for it, if I have something interesting to add to that character, then I go for it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, man. You don't want to talk yourself out of it.
The same college and a different professor who is no longer living, you know, God bless the dead. He told me something similar. His exact words were, you can't do Shakespeare because you have an African-American accent.
Damn.
He also told me I was fat and that the only way I was going to make it is if I lost 40 pounds.
Well, never mind. I won't say that. But yeah, that's pretty crazy, man.
And I listened to him because I was young, insecure, and impressionable, and I never moved to LA or New York to pursue, you know, theater full time. I shouldn't have listened to him, but I did. But at the end of the day, I'm glad I didn't, because I'm really happy with my life as it is now.
Yeah. But he didn't need to be out there crushing people's dreams and shit, man.
But that's the way it is. Theater, like, by and large, is run by white and or gay men.
Okay.
And they have a certain aesthetic that they look for. Now, it is very much more diverse than film.
Right.
And that's why the Tonys remain pretty much the Tonys and the Oscars are the only award shows I watch. And the Tonys, because you can see big people, old people, black people, Asian people playing lead roles and winning awards. It's not as prevalent as it is on a localized level, but it happens.
Okay. All right. We'll touch on a couple of things that you said a moment ago, but I just wanted to get your response, Nicole, to how you choose the roles that you audition for.
I got from a friend, the three criteria are, does it put money in my pocket? Mm-hmm. Does it add to my resume? Does it feed my soul? Not always all three have to be in place. And depending on the current situation, my schedule, the project, they are, you know, they weigh different. But if I can check off two of those three, I'll do it.
Okay. And to go back a little bit on what you all said, you mentioned that the aesthetic is pretty much either white or gay or whatever. With you all being a little bit different than that, have you faced any difficulties along the way? I mean, outside of people at your college telling you, you know, that professor saying that, you know, you're black, you shouldn't audition, have there been any other issues that really stand out along your journey as an actor? Nicole, we'll start with you and then Reggie can come in.
I mean, yes, it would be easier to answer the question on the opposite.
Like, okay.
Basically, it's different now because there's a new climate in American theater where it just is a little bit more divert. Like, you know, Condola Rashad was playing Juliet opposite Orlando Bloom on Broadway in Romeo and Juliet, mm-hmm. which is kind of unheard of. But, you know, as much as 10, 15 years ago, I was in a production of Midsummer, and me and another black girl were playing Helena and Hermia, and she and I had to kiss the male counterparts, and they thought it was going to be a big deal. And we were in kind of a small town or whatever, and I was like, really? This is a thing? I can't believe this is a thing. But, you know, it's happened. And there's also been the opposite of it now, where people kind of want more diverse casts or whatever. It'll be like, we want a black girl, and my name will be on the list with 15 other black actresses, and half of us don't have anything in common other than
the fact
that we're black. And I think that's just as bad. Like, I want you to call me in because you like what I bring to the table as an actress, not because you just need a black girl.
Right.
And you look through your black girl file and my name is in it.
Yeah. Reggie, anything about that? For you?
Yeah, I mean, it things are obviously, like, you know, like Nicole said, because she's been alive for at least twice as long as I have.
at least twice.
Damn.
Things are much better now. You know, I don't have to sing Negro spirituals at every audition that I go to.
You don't?
No.
They don't have you out there singing Paul Robeson stuff anymore?
I do have people ask me to, like, you know, can you put some spice on this song? And I'm like, oh, you want me to black it up?
Black it up, yeah. Can you say it in a jive accent?
Can you? I did actually. So I auditioned for, you know, it's like a big general audition for all the directors in the Bay Area, and I got some, like, feedback on my audition from the directors, and one of the comments was, could you do something blacker? Could you be blacker?
Wow.
So it's like, oh, you want to see some jive turkey nonsense. I'm really not about that. So, like Nicole said, you know, it actually would be easier to talk about the times where it hasn't come into play.
Right.
I mean, I will say, certainly now, as a working professional, and I just, you know, finished a play where I played a Russian police detective. So, you know, cool. That's clearly out of type for me.
No, you look Russian to me.
There are black Russians.
Yes, there are. Not in 1863. That were not police detectives, though.
Why not? Ask Dawn about that. She will give you her. Our friend Dawn is a director, and she's brilliant and smart. And that's one of her main things when she watches stuff like Downton Abbey or whatever, and there are absolutely no black people. And she is like, you mean to tell me that there were not a single person of color walking right, the yeah. streets? And even if there weren't, you're shooting the show in 2013. You've got to give a little inch on that.
Valid. Yes, for yes, real. Yes. All I'm saying is, like, you know, 5 years ago, I would not be playing the police officer in the production of Crime and Punishment anywhere.
Right.
And now it's great because there are fewer days where I am painfully aware of my ethnicity and I don't see it as a handicap. But, like, maybe even as few as 5 years ago, I definitely did. And it's just one of those, you know, it's better than it was yesterday, but it's not as good as it could be. And hopefully it'll be better tomorrow things.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, there are still huge theaters in our area, at least, who, if you're
in my area,
yes, shade, who will only call ethnic people in for the ethnic show. And maybe right. once you've done the ethnic show, you'll get on the list for the other shows. But you definitely, I mean, it's a thing. People will, in their audition posts, say things like, what is the catchphrase? When they want everyone to audition, but they really
all ethnicities are encouraged to audition.
Yeah, but they have no intention of actually using you, but they want you to come through anyway. And to me, it's like, you have to, for me personally, I don't have to be the best black girl in the room. If I'm going out for one of those roles, I have to be 2 times better than everybody else because I'm black, just to get into the door.
I do definitely think the black tax still definitely applies.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I mean, what you guys are saying about the world of acting, at least stage acting, it really sounds like sort of a microcosm of what American society is anyway in certain aspects. Like, you know, we've got to kind of really, we've got to be A++ students, and we've got to really excel in ways that other folks don't have to necessarily. So it's pretty interesting.
And if we do, they want to see our birth certificates and shit.
Exactly.
Right.
Because, you know, we could have been Muslim born somewhere else. So I don't know if there's really one answer to this. I know that there isn't one answer to this, but can you all sort of describe the audition process? Like, once you've decided to audition for a role, you know, talk to us a little bit about, you know, some of the maybe most common experiences that you all have. Reggie, we'll start with you.
So the first thing that they do when you go in, you have to take off your clothes.
Oh.
I'm just kidding. No. You don't do that.
Casting couch.
Casting couch.
I, thankfully, in all of my film, television, commercial, and theatrical auditions, have never been in a situation where I was like, am I going to have to suck some dick to get out of here alive? So, thankfully, that has not happened. But it usually is very...
with a good time.
Yeah.
Oh, I forget. Yeah. This is not a...
You know what? You need to stop. This is Act 101, not Hoeing
370. Hoeing 370.
Hoeing.
It's a graduate course. I'll teach my next graduate podcast in hoeing. Another day. Called Who's in My Mouth? No.
Oh, shit. Who's in My Mouth? God damn.
No. So it's very different from film and theater. Like, usually there are what people call sides that you have prepared. If it's a theatrical audition, or you'll either come prepared with like a monologue or two monologues or a monologue and a song, whatever.
I had monologue audition. Just give me the material.
Huh?
I hate having to prepare a monologue for the audition. Just give me the damn material.
Well, you know, sometimes they are planning on seeing a lot of people, and so they need to, like, see if you can handle the language or how versatile you are.
So you guys are saying that in some cases they'll want you to prepare your own monologue, but it's not necessarily stuff that was already written in the script?
Yeah.
So, because, you know, there's lots of different material now, and certain writers, there are lots of writers who have established their own individual style.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there's a playwright, his name is Stephen Adley, and I always say his last name wrong. Is it Gurgis or Gurgis? Or
I don't know him.
But he writes a lot of plays that are getting done right now. Like, he wrote the play called The Motherfucker with a Hat. That was on Broadway.
That sounds dope, okay. Yo.
Yeah, but his writing style is very different than August Wilson or William Shakespeare or Eugene O'Neill. So sometimes they'll want a monologue in his style to see, like, if you can handle doing that work. Because a great Shakespearean actor might not be able to do Motherfucker with a Hat or, you know, vice versa. So I understand the merit of it. Sometimes it's annoying as hell.
So is that sort of like a test of your improvisational skills and or your creativity?
Well, no, it's a test of your craft, you know, to see, like, just X's and O's, can you actually handle what we're asking you to do?
Okay,
basically.
I got it.
Yeah, and then if they see something that they like, then sometimes for a callback, they'll ask you to prepare material from the play in the role that they think they want to offer you. And then sometimes you'll read with another person being considered, or sometimes you'll have to audition with a reader who's like a complete... It's like trying to act with Switzerland, but it's really awful because they have no investment in your audition at all. So
do a dramatic interpretation of auditioning with the reader.
Okay, you ready?
I'm the reader.
Okay. But you told Hoppo to beat me.
Okay. All my life I had to, let me turn the page, fight.
I had to fight my brothers. I had to fight my daddy. So, yeah, like, you're, like, giving a fucking performance, and they're fucking lost and shit. Like, let me turn the page.
Yo, that was fucking great.
Sometimes you'll get good readers, or sometimes they'll, like, overact.
Uh-huh. Oh, God!
Yes, yeah. That's one thing that I forgot to ask you all about earlier. When it comes to you doing stage performances and doing stuff on film, one thing that I've kind of discovered or kind of found out along the way is that because stage acting is being projected, you have to project. So, like, stage actors are really loud and they're really dramatic and stuff.
And we're over the top.
How do you sort of scale it back when you're working on something else? And have you had to, like, make a conscious decision to do that?
Oh, yeah. Every time I do film or TV, they're always like, you're a stage actor, aren't you? Because I'm so loud and I project so well. And it's not that I'm, like, overacting, but there are certain muscles that you use when you want to project your voice 100 feet, 10 feet, or, like, 1,000 feet.
Right.
And so, I mean, it definitely, they're like, we have mics. You don't have to talk that loud. Mm-hmm. And then that's why you'll see a lot of actors, when they're acting, they'll talk like this loud. I'm like, who are you whispering to?
Right. That's intensity.
Yeah. It runs the whole gamut, really. There's no... The sucky thing is there's no formula, you know?
Right.
But it's great because you can't ever really feel like things are getting monotonous, because you can always mix it up and go to a different medium for a completely different experience, like a wholly different experience.
Cool. Nicole, you have anything else to add to that?
Yeah, for me, I was lucky enough because I kind of work on a small scale, so I'm not going to a whole lot of auditions, and because I have been working the Bay Area theater circuit for pretty much 18 years, right. I didn't go to
You had been before you left.
I said damn. Had, my nigga. Damn. Damn. All
right. Sound like you're a little salty there, brother.
I hadn't been going to a ton of first auditions, so I really don't enjoy having to prepare a monologue for an audition. I would much rather just read your sides or prepare a song or whatever. So for me, it was more like coming to callbacks, getting the material they had. It would be wonderful if they provided it ahead of time, which is right. standard for a professional company, but not always. And, you know, going back to my community theater days, you would just show up and they would be like, oh, here's what we want you to do. You don't really sometimes know what part you're called back for. But I like cold reading. I feel like I excel at cold reading because I'm a really good improviser. So that's where I kind of have the leg up. And I, you know, sometimes it's an open callback, sometimes a closed callback, whereas the other people you're quote unquote competing against are in the room.
Right.
And people will take each other's ideas or your feed off each other, or like, oh, well, she did it this way, I'm gonna do something totally different. And, you know, sometimes you're working with other actors, sometimes you're not. Like, it's just, the experience varies based on so many different little qualifiers.
Yeah, it sounds like the competition in that situation would probably throw you off your game because you'll probably start overthinking things.
No way. I love it. It brings out the athlete in me because really, the only person I'm in competition with is me. Yeah. I feel like everybody else at the audition is my friend. And I think that's a mistake that a lot of people make. They come through the door and they want to act all funky to everybody else right. auditioning. And I try to make friends with people. I'm real easygoing in the waiting room because also you never know who you're in there with. The chick that you're sitting next to that you think is competing with you for a role might actually be a friend of the company, or she works for the company or the director all the time. Because that's happened to me. I've auditioned for director friends and they'd be like, what'd you think of so-and-so? I'm like, oh, the bitch that wasn't talking to nobody in the waiting room? Oh.
And she might have taken Reggie's whole class and been in there right. for that reason. All right. Wait,
sign up to be available at ReggieHowen.com.
ReggieHowen.com. We will put that in the show notes. All right, man. So, yeah, keeping an eye on...
That is not a real website. I am not responsible for whatever viruses you get when you visit that website.
If it's available.
Yeah, you might want to go ahead and buy that.
Income stream.
All right, so moving things along, man, I wanted to ask you, well, we talked about auditioning or whatever. So once you've been selected for a role, is there a particular process that you go through to really grasp the character and to actually become that person? Reggie, we'll start with you, and then we'll go to Nicole.
You know, every actor has their own individual process for research.
Mm-hmm. This is where it's about to get real scoochy.
Uh-oh.
Shut up.
Ladies and gentlemen at home, buckle your seatbelts. The scoochiness is about to take off. Reggie,
I'm
take over.
Yeah, I'm an artist too within this
Yeah, so I have my own individual process for research, and I like to do lots of anthropological research. I like to be very specific about like the time period and things like that. And if there's source material, I like to read that to sort of glean as many things as possible to make it as true as possible. But it also, it's, you know, important for me to understand that I'm not really in the business of being a mimic. And so I don't want to like watch somebody else's production of it or watch someone else's performance of it, because I feel like that's just inauthentic. And I'll also, you know, what's great is in a lot of rehearsal processes, there'll be a period of what's called table work, when you can sort of read through the play a couple of times with the director and get their ideas. And this is where that sort of collaborative thing comes in. So like, if you have ideas about your character, but the director has really strong opinions one way or another about the way that they think it should be portrayed, then you can sort of hash those things out or come to a meeting of the minds on the best way to bring both of your ideas to fruition. I always usually like to come in on the first day with a pretty strong idea of who the character is and what he's about and what he wants. But I can say with 100% confidence, the character that I've come to rehearsal with the first day has never been the character that the show is closed as. Like, he always makes adjustments slightly, either based on what some of the other actors are doing with him or what some of the conversations that I have with the director, or just, you know, life experience and having a broader idea of what this person is and having them evolve, because characters, even though they're static fictional people, they can also evolve too. So
right.
Yeah, it's all very artsy fartsy.
Now, I wanted to ask you a question about what you just said about how the way that the character can go from, you know, the beginning to the end. Is that something that you sort of change before production begins, like before you actually get on stage, or is it possible that, like, if I went to go see the play the very first night that it came out and then I saw it on the last night, that I might notice that you sort of changed how you played that role?
Listen, I have beef about sometimes when actors, like, completely change things from opening night to closing night.
Yeah.
So there's a rule that it's an accepted rule. Like, you don't walk into the middle of a theater and shout out and scream Macbeth for whatever reason.
The reason after.
Yeah. But you also try to keep it fairly consistent. Like, you know, that's why we have rehearsal. Not we, but that's why there is a rehearsal process. Mm-hmm. So you can form these ideas and sort of calcify them so that your fellow actors can sort of trust that they know what's going to happen. Now, if there are bits and things that are supposed to be improv every night or whatever, but like, yeah, I don't even want to talk about that, Nicole. But, you know, like, if one day, if you saw the show opening night, Leonard, and I was doing the show with a British accent, you shouldn't come back 3 weeks later and I'm doing the show with a German accent and a limp and I'm wearing a pimp suit.
Yeah.
Like, it should be pretty similar.
Okay.
From opening night to closing night. Yeah. No, it shouldn't sound like I'm on a recorded track. Like, maybe my inflections and my words might be different.
Right.
Or maybe I might be focusing on a different focal point at a certain part of a monologue or whatever. Or I might have different activities that I do, like, internally or whatever. But the overall arc of the character and his overall behavior should definitely remain the same for the sanity of the actor and their fellow actors and the director and the lighting designer and everybody else who's like, I put the fucking light here. You can't just decide to walk
right
across the stage in the middle of the
motherfucker, the stage ain't lit over there. God damn it. This nigga. Yeah. Yeah. You don't
know. That's
why
you can't do shit like that.
Yeah, man.
That's why you can't do shit like that.
Okay. I got you, man. Nicole, what is
no actors who have, like, switched shit up and left people in the lurch, like, what the fuck is he or she doing right now?
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. Nicole, what's your answer to that question? Once again, we're talking about the process that people go through, or at least these two people go through, and once they've been selected for a role. So, Nicole, what do you have for us?
See, for me, it's different depending on the type of show it is, how deeply I prepare or not, or whatever. And I don't have a problem listening to other people's versions of things because I consider myself a mimic. And maybe it's because I'm primarily a comedian. Okay. So a lot of my work is driven by the foreground that has already been laid that somebody else did. And maybe it's a cheating way out, but I feel like there are iconic things about the way somebody has done something, and some of those things are iconic for a reason. And, like, I'll listen to a couple different versions of a song. Let's say I'm doing a musical, and take those things and steal the shit I really like from people. I mean, you know.
That's right, Beyonce. You take it.
I'm saying. I don't really see a problem with that. I definitely am going to always make it my own. But, like, for example, I was doing a production of Aida, and the director wanted to cut a reprise of a song, and the musical director loved it. And plus, I think it was a silly cut. It wouldn't have made sense anyway. But the musical director took me in on a private one-on-one rehearsal at his house, and he was like, you know how Elton John uses that breathing and back phrasing? I need you to go listen to hours and hours of Elton John, and I need you to sing this song like Elton John. And that's what I did, and we kept it. So, you know, I don't see an issue with stuff like that. I also,
with musicals, it's a lot different. Like, I definitely, yeah.
But also with movies too. I mean, like, you know, Elizabeth Taylor is iconic Maggie the Cat, and I would certainly watch and study what she did if I were playing Maggie in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. I don't know that I would do exactly what she did because I'm not her, but I would look at her work. Now, there's a cutoff. There's a certain point, like either right before rehearsal start or once we get in on our feet in rehearsals, that I'll stop looking at the source material and just make it my own. But I do, like, you know, right before we did The Wiz, I listened to nothing but The Wiz for 2 weeks at work.
That's pretty cool. Before we forget it, you said you were going to tell us about why we can't scream Macbeth in a theater.
Okay, so actors are probably more superstitious than, like, old black ladies and Jewish grandmothers.
Shout out to all the old black ladies out there.
Right. The play Macbeth has a lot of technical elements. There's sword fighting and stuff like that. So over time of performing the show, people have been seriously injured and or killed in the performance of the show. Damn. So it is considered unlucky to speak the name of the show in a theater. Now, you can reference a character. So if I'm saying Lady Macbeth, that's okay. But for the most part, people call it the Scottish play.
Damn.
Wait, you can say Macbeth, like referring to the character?
Just cannot say it in reference to the title of the play.
So would you say Lady Macbeth's husband, or?
I would call him McBee because I'm hella I still wouldn't agree. I would say Lady Macbeth. I don't have a problem with Lady Macbeth, but it's very hard for me to, even not being in a theater, say the name of the Scottish play.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I'm not superstitious at all. And, like, I almost wanted to be an asshole one time.
Will you walk through an empty theater and whistle?
Yes. Oh. And, wait, but here's the thing, though, because I didn't even know that was a thing.
Mm.
I had the stage manager for Crime and Punishment walk up to me and be like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Seriously. And she was like, you can't do that. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry.
Did she tell you why, at least?
Yes, she did. Can you explain for everyone why that's not a good idea?
Back in the day before they had, like, and you know, the internet now is a very vast thing. I haven't looked up any of this folklore on the internet, so I'm strictly going off of theater history stuff from high school and college. It could be that there are multiple explanations for everything at this point. But from what I have learned, back in the day before electricity and headsets, when the backstage crew could talk to each other via, you know, headsets, they had different cues for different things. So whistling would be, you know, lower this or that on the fly system. So if you just are whistling for nothing, you might get a huge set piece dropped on your head.
Oh, man. Damn, see.
They have ghosts, usually, because they're old places, and you don't want to wake up an old stagehand whistling and stuff and, you know, just have a big old weight or a sandbag just dropped on your head.
Yeah, that would fuck up your weekend plans.
It might.
Yeah. So, you know, moving along a little bit further into this thing, I wanted to ask you all what you feel are some of the most challenging parts into getting into a character once you've been selected for it. We'll start with Nicole and then we'll go to Reggie.
I think for me, it's because I am an actor who works outside in, which means I have to find some sort of physicality or twitch or some speech pattern that is the character before I can make the distinction between myself and this thing I'm creating. There's always elements of me in my characters because I don't have multiple personalities, but there's always a moment where I go, oh, this gesture right here, that's Glinda. And then it becomes alive for me. But it's always a struggle for me to find what that is until I put it in my body. Some actors work inside out. Mm-hmm. I don't understand that process because as an actor, I do connect to things like sense memory and stuff like that. But in order to not make it free therapy and to disconnect my mind from it at first, I have to make it physical and then I can make it internal. Because the internal part is super easy for me. Right. I'm a very empathetic person. I have a lot of life experience. It's very easy for me to connect to emotion. But to draw a line between Nicole and Helena, I have to make it physical.
Okay, so before we get to you, Reggie, I just wanted to make sure I understand what she's saying here. So it sounds like what you're saying is that once you have the character, you sort of try to find a way or something. It could be like you said, a speech pattern or a physical trait or something like that. But once you find that, then it's kind of like, okay, this is what separates me from this person.
Right. And now it's my trigger, because yeah. I have, like, for a real life example, I have really bad posture. So if I'm playing a character who needs to stand up straight, that simple physical adjustment will put me into character, because I don't stand straight in real life.
Now, one more question about that. Do you find yourself standing up straight and using that posture in your everyday life while you're playing that character, or is it strictly when you're doing that character?
Just on stage.
Okay. So you're slouched over every other part of the day until it's time
to
get on.
Unless it's something like I need to learn how to walk in an extremely difficult pair of shoes, then I will sometimes outside of rehearsal wear those shoes, or wear them for the entire rehearsal period, whether I'm on stage or not. Like, I had to wear a corset in a show in college, and so I would lace up the minute I got into the theater and not take it off until I left.
All right, okay, that's what's up. All right, man, Reggie, what's your answer? Sir, what is the most challenging parts to getting into a role for you?
I kind of work a lot like Nicole said. It's the easiest for me to learn my lines working outside in, because it's really easy to associate, you know, a move with a part of a monologue.
I can't get my lines without blocking. That's so frustrating. That's why it's hard for me to do more professional work, because you work on a shorter rehearsal schedule and they expect you to show up off book, and that is extremely difficult for me.
It's tough. You know, they technically, because of the union, they can't ask you to be off book before rehearsal starts.
But they can give you the material and strongly suggest it.
Yes, and they can side-eye you when it takes a couple of days. You know, like most directors, if you work through something once, then the next day they expect you to have it memorized. Mm-hmm. But
which is fine, but just to do it.
It's tough, you know, putting it all together, really. And I guess, especially for me, in the last couple of shows that I've done, I played multiple characters, and like differentiating them as completely separate human beings. Like this character. So in Crime and Punishment, I played four different people. I played the police officer. I played this girl's drunk dad. I played this like ghost in someone's dream, and then I played this drunk neighbor. And all four, like making all four of them completely distinctly different was a real challenge, because, you know, you have to make them different and still part of you, and you can't use all your tricks on one and things like that. But, you know, thankfully we had a 3-week rehearsal process, and so rehearsal is kind of where I do the most of my work and really fall on my face a lot. That's it. That's the hardest thing for me in terms of getting into a character, is being afraid of getting something wrong.
Right, okay.
Because, you know, as a professional, and, you know, they're paying me X amount of dollars every week to be there, it's like, well, I should be perfect, or I should be the best or most prepared or whatever, and realizing that art is intrinsically imperfect.
Yes.
So, you know, acknowledging that, like, I'm gonna not say this right the first time, or the director is not going to think every choice I make is perfect. And accepting that is really, really hard for me, because as a, you know, super overachiever in school, like, perfection was my calling card. So acknowledging that imperfection is going to be part of the rest of my life if I choose to be a human being, basically, and especially if I want to be an actor, that's the hardest part of realizing that the character's not perfect, and my portrayal of it won't be at first.
Okay. But you know what? That is perfect, because that's part of the process. You can't get to the Holy Grail unless you mess up. You can't get to the perfect line reading unless you do it wrong so many times. And like our very wise friend Halili always says, we are still working. Until opening night, we are working.
It's true. It's definitely true. It's definitely a process, and acknowledging that it is a process, and it's not going to be Tony Award winning the first time you say those lines out loud.
Right.
was tough for me, but now I've gotten over it.
And I think you're the same way, Reggie, but I'm not process oriented. I'm product oriented. Rehearsal makes me itch. I just like to get to the part where we know the show and we're performing it every night. That's my bread and butter right there. Rehearsal is just a means to an end for me.
It actually depends on the show. There are some shows that I really enjoy rehearsing. Like Crime and Punishment, I really, really enjoyed rehearsing that show because there was so much discovery and so much like work and I don't know. But there are some shows where I'm like, okay, let's go. Let's do it. I'm ready.
I think too, because it's a lot of times you don't really get that perfect rehearsal scenario. So when you do get it, it's all good. Like I love doing that work. I love making those discoveries. But for the most part, it's missed time management and just a bunch of dramatics and all that. Like, let me just get to the audience part.
Cool. So we know, we've got a few more minutes before Reggie has to get out of here. So I'm going to go ahead and get close to wrapping it up, but I've got a couple more things I want to ask you all. One of the questions that I wanted to ask was, what kinds of roles challenge you all the most? You know, what are the things that a character has that sort of challenge you the most in playing that person? We'll start with Reggie.
Oh God. Dancing.
You got two left feet?
No, I have a left and a right foot, and I know how to two step.
All right,
But no, I don't know. I don't want to say nothing. But
you can say nothing. Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen. That's Reggie's answer. Go ahead. No, that's it.
God damn it.
This man is the Kanye West of acting. Nicole, do you have any difficulties in any of your roles, or are you perfect as well?
Victor is very similar to me. I think there's a huge misassumption that if a person is playing themselves or a character like themselves, it should be very easy for them to do. And I feel like that is grossly inaccurate. The closer a character is to me, the harder it is for me to figure it out.
Okay, that makes sense. So now that we've talked about the difficulties, what are some of the easiest roles or some of the most fun roles that you can play? Nicole, we'll start with you.
I'm a big fan of doing sketch comedy, and I do like playing multiple characters in one show or, you know, doing improv stuff or just coming up. That's when I was in college, a guy came down to, you know, we were doing a Commedia dell'arte style show that has a bunch of different archetype characters that are in every single play. So you just have to learn the archetype and all the tricks that they do or whatever. And after evaluating us for a week, he kind of came up to me and he was like, I really see you doing a one-woman show. You have a really good grasp of character and you see people and portray them very well. So I've always looked up to Whoopi Goldberg as one of my professional idols. And I just love the way she can just, I wouldn't necessarily say I do accents because I'm not really good at that, but I just observe people very well. And one day I'm going to put all the crazy people I've met on stage and just show y'all how they look.
That's what's up. Reggie, what you got, bro?
In the words of Letarian, it's fun to do bad things.
Who is Letarian?
He was on The Real World, right? Boy.
That little badass kid who said it's fun to do hood rat stuff with my friends.
Okay. I didn't know that was his name.
I didn't know that was his name. I thought you were talking about the cat that was on The Real World back in the days.
No, I just had to Google him on the fly to be like, yeah, Letarian.
Shout out to technology.
Yeah, that little badass kid. No, word. For me, it's really fun to play the bad guy.
Okay.
Because in my real, everyday, regular life, I'm so often the good guy and like, go out of my way, shut your motherfucking ass. Oh, okay. I just had to, you know, proactively block your shade because I knew it was coming.
I said you're so not the bad guy. Look at
that. I think she did say that.
See, I take it back. Yes, Nicole is right. I am so nice. Well, I'm nice to everyone except for her.
Except for me.
No, but it's also, you know, another, I did a play earlier this year that Nicole did not like, but it was really fun for me playing this role. The play was called The Bereaved, and basically one of the things,
like, it,
there were a couple of scenes that were problematic.
It's like this. I am a very meat and potatoes kind of girl when it comes to theater. That was like whole wheat fusilli with vegan cheese. I didn't get it. It wasn't my bag.
The one with the, when I was the drug dealer?
Oh, I thought you were talking about the one.
No, that's Dog's Body.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't dislike it. I just didn't, I didn't dislike The Bereaved.
It don't sound like you like that shit either, though.
Right. I thought Reggie was really good, and I told him he was a really good drug dealer. For a minute, he almost could have got it. If
Reggie,
it
weren't.
No, me. I know you said I was good with the whole play. Exactly. But like one of the things that the playwright said to us on the first day of rehearsal, and it's really also really great when you're doing a play and the playwright is there. Those are, for me, the most fun experiences because you can really
feel. I have a totally different experience.
Well, that was a problematic situation from the top to the bottom. But oftentimes, it's great because you're actually feeling like you're part of creating the work.
Okay.
Along with, you know, the writer and the director.
Right.
But he said something to us about these characters, and he said they have no id, meaning like they don't have subtext. So whatever they say, they actually feel and do, which is so fun, I guess, as an actor, because in real life we don't do that. Like, we often have subtext when we say things, or we often
speak to yourself.
We often have, you know, things that we want to say, but we don't actually say. And it was fun to play a character who I was like, oh, he really says this? Oh, shit. And he was like, and the writer was like, well, he feels it, so why shouldn't he say it? Now, I don't recommend living your life that way.
No, that might get you fucked up out there.
That might get you fucked up. That might get some sandbags dropped on your head.
Yeah.
But,
Whistle.
Yeah, whistle in the theater. See how that works for you.
I did like that play much better when I did find out that the playwright was black. I was feeling some type of way about it if he was not black.
Shout out to black artists.
If he was not black, Nicole, I would have burnt the theater down for producing it.
Yeah, right. I was feeling some type of way about the whole situation until you told me he was black.
All right, so I got a couple more questions, and then we'll go ahead and get out of here. One of them is, are there any roles that you won't take? Anything on stage or any characters that you won't do?
Yeah.
And since Miss Nicole is laughing, we will let her tell us her answer first.
I will not play Tituba in The Crucible.
Who?
Tituba.
Why?
Because she's like a slave with bad grammar.
Oh, okay.
So, and it is the joke among a lot of black actresses, like, oh, they did a black show, then the next season they did The Crucible, like, so I could only come back to be the slave. I won't do it.
That's what's up. Reggie?
And I gave a stirring rendition of Tituba. And Nicole is afraid to put on my shoes.
She's scared. Mm-hmm. Any roles or things that you won't do, Reggie?
You know, it really is about those two of those five P's.
Okay.
About the play and the part. Like, I would say I, like, on GP wouldn't play a slave, but, you right. know, if there was a movie like 12 Years a Slave, I'd be like, well, fuck yeah, I'm gonna do that. That sounds like a great part.
Right.
So it's really difficult. That would be a great part.
Hell yeah. I'm laughing in agreement.
Oh, okay. I was like, it would. I'm really excited to see that movie.
I played the hell out of some Django.
Yeah.
Right.
Hey, you gonna put on that blueberry suit, though?
Hell yeah.
He looked like a straight up blueberry.
Would that quick turn to no check? Yes, I would.
Yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. I actually might even go on voice to say that there is a particular actor, producer, director, mogul whose work I at one point would have said, I don't know if I want to be in.
Well, Leonard knows how I feel about this. I would do it in a hot minute too.
I would, I, you know, I wouldn't do the like gospel plays?
No.
Right. Maybe. I don't think so. But I would do the movies and I would do the TV shows.
I also don't do nudity on stage because in the world of social media, there's just too many opportunities for somebody to be taking an unauthorized picture or video of your nudity, which in a theatrical reference could be beautiful and well lit, but on another realm could get you fired from work. So
yeah, once they put them Instagram filters on there, it just fucks up the whole right. scenario.
I would do it if it was not gratuitous.
But I feel like all nudity on stage is gratuitous, and this is a like side combo we can have later, but I have never been in a production with nudity where somebody could give me a straight answer as to why the character needed to be naked.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, so what would be your dream role? What is the character, the play, the movie? What would be your dream role to go out there and execute? We'll start with Reggie and then we'll go to Nicole.
I don't know.
Question.
That's a really tough question. I mean, I will say this. If I did this, I would probably drop the mic on my acting career and be done. If I could play like the black man in every August Wilson play, I would be done. Like, I would just, like, there's nothing more for me to do. If I could play, and most of these I'm too young to play anyway, so it could still happen.
Yeah, Reggie just graduated from high school.
Just, like, 5 minutes ago. I actually have a final that's due in 5 minutes.
Yep.
But, like, Troy Maxson, the dad in Fences, or the guy in Radio Golf, or King Hadley II, or Floyd in Seven Guitars. Like, those are all plays that before I give this all up to be a professional stripper, I want to say I played all those roles.
All right, that's what's up. Nicole, what's your answer to that question?
I used to have a very long list, and I have been so blessed and fortunate to strike pretty much all of those off the list. There are a couple of Shakespeare that remain. As we discussed earlier, the Scottish play, I would love to try my hand at Lady Macbeth. I also would want to be Titania if she was double cast as Hippolyta in A Midsummer Night's Dream. I've done that show twice. I've played Helena both times. I really want to wrap my arms around the Fairy Queen. And as far as musicals go, I mean, it'll never happen because nobody would ever cast me correctly.
Well, not with that attitude.
Well, this is the thing. It's Dreamgirls. And as far as the theater world is concerned, I'm Effie. But I'm not Effie because...
No, it's not.
That's what they see me as, an Effie. I can't sing Effie. I think a real big girl should play Effie. I am definitely... not Adina, which a lot of people would like to call me Dina, but I'm like, you know, I don't know. She's like the Michelle of Destiny's Child.
The one that falls on stage and gets the L ice grill from Beyonce.
But I was born to play Laurel, and I don't think that anybody would ever cast me as Laurel.
I cast you as Laurel yesterday.
But you also know, like, how I could twerk that role. Just walking in.
Like, even vocally, like, that's
my part. That's my part. But walking in off the street, I'm not quite full figured enough to be an Effie, but in theater world, they'd be like, you're an Effie. And I don't really have the vocal quality for Effie. And I'm certainly not a Dina. If they think I'm big enough to play Effie, they sure don't think I'm small enough to be Dina.
Well, I think also a lot of times Laurel is mousy, and you're certainly not mousy. I don't think it would be interesting to see a mousy Laurel. I don't either. I think it would be really interesting to see like a proactive Laurel who just gets like railroaded by these two egomaniacs.
She's a little naive, I think, too. And her transition is the best because one day she's like, you know what? I'm tired. I'm tired of y'all talking over me and telling me what to do.
But, and she's over on the side, fucking married man. Right. So she ain't that naive.
Damn.
But, you know, let them tell it. I'm not an appropriate love interest.
All right, guys. So my last question before we get out of here is going to be a shout out, an ode to the What's the Tea podcast, aka That Tea. And I'm going to ask you all if you have an acting hey boo.
oh, we need another hour.
We ain't got an hour. Reggie got to get out of here to finish his homework, so I need the short and sweet version. Do you have a Hey Boo? Nicole, you got a Hey Boo as an actor? It could be somebody that, like, maybe you really drew inspiration from, or, you know, you mentioned Whoopi Goldberg earlier. She could be, like, you know, it's kind of on the spot, but, you know, I figured I'd throw that in there.
Yeah, no. It's so hard because I feel like there are a very short list of actors who I don't miss. Like, there was a time when I felt like Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan should be in every movie ever, and I wanted them to be married in real life. And now there's not many actors who I run to the theater to see. For a really long time, it was Nia Long. Like, I needed to wear my hair like her. I was completely obsessed with her.
Oh, you did have your hair like
totally different reasons.
One of her hairstyles I rocked. For me, I think it's gonna have to be, and this is gonna be very shocking to hear, Denzel, because I didn't get him at first, and all my aunts would be like, "Ooh, Denzel," and I didn't think he was that fine. I didn't think he was that I didn't think he was that great of an actor. And then I saw Remember the Titans, and that is when it all turned around for me. And then I went back and watched some of his
Mo Better Blues
and Glory, like that
single tear.
I feel like Denzel is one of the best doing it, one of the best to ever do it, and I really, really, really respect him as an actor.
Word. Shout out to Denzel. Reggie, who you got, man?
Oh God, this is really tough. There are so many actors who I admire and respect and think are incredibly talented, and they all have their Oscars and Tonys and Emmys and Golden Globes and all of that. But I'm going to just shout out Jason Segel because he is so fine. And
shout out to comedians. I think people a lot of times discredit comedians as being good actors, but I think Jim Carrey, Eddie Murphy, like, so those are some of the best actors, and they get, you know, whatever, second rate because they're comedians.
Right.
Yeah.
Jason Segel.
Jason Segel. Woo! My daddy!
You are such a...
Yes, I am. And for Jason Segel, I would be a mojo.
Man. Reggie's going to be teaching that class.
Neil Patrick Harris.
A mojo.
You threw down the gauntlet.
That's sorry, crazy. Not sorry, MPH. It's not for you no more. Your Debbie window has closed.
Can I shout an honorable mention to Angela Bassett, too?
Yes, Angela.
And I want to shout out, because, you know, I know Leonard be feeling some kind of way when Nicole and I don't pick black Hey Boos. I want to give a shout out to Don Cheadle.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Don does his thing. He definitely does his thing in the movies, man.
And I would be remiss not to mention my boo, Kevin Smith, in front and behind the camera.
I thought you were going to say Kevin Hart, and I was like, really?
You know, we don't mention that name.
Hilarious.
I was like, wait, who?
Kevin Smith!
No, I know Kevin Smith is.
If you know me, you know him.
Yeah. White hating coon.
Yes.
All right, y'all. Well, I definitely want to thank y'all for joining me on this and teaching me and the audience about acting. I want to give you all the opportunity to just, you know, shout out whatever you want to shout out, your Twitter stuff, your podcast, whatever you want to say. So I'll leave the floor open to you and you go ahead and do your thing.
Well, Nicole doesn't have a Twitter, but
Joe don't.
You're such a lie. Our show Twitter is at Good Day Saints, and it's also our email address, gooddaysaints@gmail.com, for our podcast, What's the Tea? We release an episode every Tuesday, so if you haven't heard it yet, I don't know what's wrong with you, but you should check it out. It's really funny. And we have a Facebook page. It's What's the Tea? No, it's not whatsthetea.com/Facebook. It's facebook.com/
What's the Tea Pod.
P-O-D.
Mm-hmm.
And my Twitter is Archer the Edgy, but if you tweet me, I don't check that shit.
Yeah, he
if
don't.
You can. I'm like, yeah. I know. I've gotten better, Leonard. I set the notifications on my phone to refresh. I saw that it was set to refresh every 2 days, and I was like, oh, maybe that's why.
Yeah.
These tweets go unresponded.
People like, man, this nigga Reggie is disrespectful, man. He don't get back to people.
No, it's not that my refresh settings were super old. Sorry.
No doubt. All right, man. So, yeah, I'm Leonard. I'm, you know, at L Brothers Media on Twitter, lbrothersmedia.com. And the show Twitter is at Look Listen Pod. And that's pretty much it, man. We're going to go ahead and wrap it up because Mr. Reggie has to get out of here. Once again, thank you to Nicole and Reggie. Check out their show. It's a great show. It's on iTunes, Podomatic, and Stitcher. What's the T is the name of it. This is the Look and Listen Podcast, and we out of here.
Bye.
Giving you your introduction. This be the 101.